Okay, so let me talk about another really exciting era. One of my more favorite eras. That's why I'm showing these. I could have shown a lot of different stuff. I decided just to show a few really fun ones. So this is caloric restriction and lifespan extension, and particularly cancer. This is an amazing literature. Caloric restriction is the only intervention ever demonstrated to extend the maximal lifespan of animals, warm-blooded mammals, animals. So you can put an animal, you reduce their daily intake by 33%, let's say. So they eat 67% of normal. And they will live, a rat will live 3 years instead of, the longest rat will ever live without that is 2.5. Same with them. So not only that, they live better. They're healthier. They're leaner and look better and have babies later in life if you let them, and better immunology. They're just slow. They're slow. Their aging appears to have been slowed, and they actually live longer. There's nothing else. It doesn't just compress. It's the old model. You know, there's old model. The analogy of the Model T Ford, which is that. The perfect thing is you live to be 95, and then everything falls apart at once, and then you die. So that's like the old Model T Ford, everything, and then all of a sudden, everything breaks at once. So that's one model, but this is that doesn't just do that. It actually makes you live to be, you know, longer. It's the only thing that does it. So it's called undernutrition without malnutrition. You make it get enough protein and vitamins, but you just have fewer calories. And it reduces cancer in particular. Now I'm going to go into that. That's what many laboratory animals die of, actually, is cancer. And kidney disease, but cancer is one of the main things, and so it reduces that. So, but the problem is, who is going to do this? So there are actually trials of this, but it's never caught on. Who is going to go the next? It's the old joke. I didn't live longer; it just felt that way. So who is going to actually, you know, be hungry for the next 50 years, so that you can live 60 more? Nobody does that. There are some people who do that. They have clubs. They're called restrictors and stuff like that. But yeah. There's clubs for everything, I'm sure. So the other point about this is cancer. So normally, like as I said, normal cells get born and die. That's called turnover. And that rate at which that occurs, however, is significant, because if you have a high rate of that, you accrue genetic damage, and there's all kinds of other things that happen. So if your breast cells or your lung cells or your pancreas cells or your prostate cells happen to be high, or your colon cells turn over and proliferate and die a lot, you are at higher risk for cancer. That's relatively well known. And so, but how do you know the rate at which it's occurring? Because you have the same colon there, it's just it's new or old. And who can, yes? Oh, it's a good question. Some of it's genetic, but a lot of it is environmental. So what you eat affects breast cell proliferation or colonocyte, if you have high fat diet or meat, or if actually exercise, strangely enough, and obesity or weight affect colon cell proliferation, probably because insulin is a colonocyte mitogen. So you have all this complicated interaction. So people who have high insulins because they don't exercise get more colon cancer, it turns out, and that might be why. Anyway, so we asked a more fun question, which is that, because everybody knows the caloric restriction, we said, can we cheat this system? We're trying to trick this system into figure out what is it about caloric restriction that does it. You'll see what I mean. So here's the study we did. Let me give you some background before I go through the data. So how do people calorically restrict mice to do these studies, or rats to do these studies? What they did is about 30 years ago, they decided the way they would do it is they would give them 70% of their weekly intake, but they would just feed them 3 times a week. They feed them Monday, and the reason is it's really tedious every day to go in and weigh out the food. So they just feed them Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The graduate students come in. So Friday to Sunday, to Monday, they just have one big meal. And so that's caloric restriction traditionally. And so we said, well, gosh, I wonder if it's the intermittency of the intake could have any role as opposed to the amount of calories. So what if they just ate every other day, but ate whatever the heck they wanted, so they really didn't restrict? Because if you let an animal eat every other day, it'll pretty much catch up. So the question is the pattern, intermittency versus the amount. And you can understand if I said to people, I'd like you to restrict your diet every other day. So you go for a fed day, a feast day, a fast day, a feast, fast. But eat whatever you want so you don't lose weight, so you really can pig out on the onde. People might say, I'll do that. I'll do that. As opposed to, I want you to be hungry the next 50 years. Your call. So we asked that question. Actually, we weren't even that smart. We stumbled onto this, I have to say. But anyway, so here's how we did it. So this is we're measuring the turnover of skin cells, proliferate, because skin gets a lot of skin cancer in these, or you can induce skin cancers in these animals. Anyway, so this is a normal turnover rate here. And so this is what happens if you calorically restrict for 2 weeks or a month. So they give them 70. So the skin cell proliferation rate goes down a lot, and I'll show you some more like this. But the fun part of this was that what we thought was our control group, where we gave them basically 95% of their normal diet, and that's basically nothing, not restriction. We do that just so they don't overeat, but we did it 3 days a week. So this is 67% of their normal diet, 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. This is basically their normal diet, 95% of it. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can see that they had a pretty significant drop in the proliferate just by eating intermittently. So every other day, they're a little hungry. They're starving. When we did it with breast cells, mammary cells, it was striking. Just by eating every other day, you cut the mammary cell proliferation rate by two-thirds. Almost as much as you got by starving the ant, by really reducing the animal. Same thing was true with T cells. So you can get just by this 95% trick by doing it intermittently, you can get a big reduction. So we said, wow, this is exciting. Let's test this properly. We're going to feed animals in a continuous versus an intermittent fashion at the exact same caloric level. It's shown here, just so you know. So we either really restricted them or just gave them 95%, and then we gave them a pellet dispenser, which means you ever eat a pellet every 20 minutes. That's like how it might. That's how we eat, you know, or a lot of people eat. And then, or daily meal, or three times a week. So I'll show you just a couple of slides. So basically, if you caloric restrict, which is you really starve them, it doesn't matter how you do it, it works. So whether you give it by a pellet dispenser, by daily, or by intermittent, you get a reduction in the turnover rate of these cells, the division rate of these cells. But the interesting part, so if you, here's ad lib. Here's 95% pellet dispenser, so they get a pellet every 20 minutes, no effect. 95% daily meal, no effect. 95% three times a week, an effect. So it was the intermittency, the pattern of food intake, has a potent effect. It tricks the system, the way we interpret it, into thinking it's starved, because it gets starved every other day. It doesn't realize in the on day it's a pig, because in nature that doesn't come up. In nature you would eat intermittently, but probably not. So you have to have adaptations to starvation. So we think this is the natural response to caloric insufficiency or to scarcity, and it slows everything down, including cells, slows a lot of things down in the body, and that we're tricking it by doing it intermittently. It's not that smart. So anyway, the same thing happened for other cell types. So the bottom line here is that this is really a promising. We're actually trying to put together a big NIH program project to study this in comparison to, you know, old school caloric restriction, which is that caloric restriction does slow down the growth rate of cells in an impressive way, but most of these effects can be reproduced, at least in animals, by feeding intermittently. Now, we can do all these measurements in people. We've done all these measurements in people. We haven't done the alternate day food intake. So that is important in carcinogenesis, probably, and maybe other things. So we're going to. And it would, of course, be a more acceptable way of restricting. There actually are people who do this kind of alternate day restriction out there, and you know, for a variety of reasons. Yes?
What do you eat on the intermittent day?
Right. So actually, a friend of mine did a study where he published it last year, where he did this. He starved people 24 hours every other day. So on day, off day, on day, off day. And you eat nothing. So for that one, you eat nothing on your down day. And people hated it. The conclusion of this paper was people were grumpy. It wasn't quite in those terms. But that's been, during their starvation day, they even after a month or 3 months, they didn't get used to it. They figured maybe they'd adapt, and they'd figure to eat enough in the on day. But it didn't work. People couldn't do it. So the trick might be to eat 25% of your noodle intake on your down day, or maybe 35, or maybe 45. So that's the whole point of these measurements that I'm talking about. The only way you can ever do that, what are you going to do? You could do it this way. You could say, we're going to feed you 25% on your down day and whatever you want on your feast day, and we're going to come back in 20 years and see if you live longer. And then if that didn't work, we're going to try it again in the year 2034, or whatever it would be. So that's a ridiculous way. So the other way to do it is to actually have a measurement, like we're talking about here, and to tune the dial and see what works best. What is the amount of calories that gets the job done of prolonging life? Yeah, that's it. So that's what we're doing. We're going to do a dose response curve, so to speak, of calories that get the job done and that people can tolerate. So we're hoping we can find that level, let's say 35%, where you don't feel so bad, but you get the benefits. But we're hoping we can trick the system, which is what therapeutics is about. Yes?
Would once a day have any effect?
So once a day, eating once a day, yes. In fact, once a day hasn't been studied well, but there is but if you look at animals who are fed, look at animals who are fed once a day, actually that has been done, and they do have a big circadian so-called or daily rhythm. And at night, when they're not eating, their body temperature goes down, it's not like they go into a hibernation mode, all kinds of interesting things happen. So once a day may not do it though, but it may be closer. So maybe that's enough. But the idea is intermittent intake may be different, the pattern may be as important as the amount. It probably takes a couple days for the body to hormonally sense this. Yeah, so this is a controversial thing. So yo-yo dieting is very different, though. Yo-yo dieting is not when you eat yo-yos. It's when you... Right. Yo-yo dieting is when you lose weight and gain weight. So some people go through these things like wrestlers. They lose weight to hit weight and they gain it. Or more people, more likely in life, people lose weight and they go and they get discouraged and they gain weight. So that some people believe that that's a bad thing for you, that it becomes progressively harder to lose weight each time you do that because your body adapts. I'm not convinced by that literature, but even if it's true, it has nothing to do with this, which is not yo-yo. This is more rapid yo-yo. This is not losing, gaining. This is, fine change. Yes.
Well, I know that biological systems adapt to their environment. So what would prevent? You don't have any measurement about adaptation.
No, that's the thing here. This is the adaptation. What we're doing here, and this is this is a great question. This is the way I see it. We're not making anything happen on our own. We are using the adaptation of the body for benefit. So the adaptation is the scarcity response. There is a response to starvation, which is lowering insulin-like growth factor and changing a lot of proliferative hormones, because when you're starving, you don't make a lot of new cells because you got to put everything on hold.
So what you're saying is it's like it's a bigger human adaptation that you can't fight in one lifetime.
I think I know what you're saying, but what we're saying is that we're trying to take advantage of a starvation response that is supposed to be when you starve, and we're trying to nudge it in there without starving. Right, just by intermittently, yes.
So the set point theory
So the set point theory is a theory about body fat, or body weight, which is everybody has a certain body weight that they tend to defend. And there may or may not be an actual set point, but we do tend to maintain relatively stable weights for physiologic reasons. Be happy to talk about that separately. But this doesn't. The beauty of this is this doesn't change your weight. So this is great. You don't actually, in fact, we go out of our way not to let you change your weight because that would be caloric restriction. We want to see if we can get benefits with no weight change. And that's what the clinical study would be, and that's what the animal study showed.
Do you sacrifice any physical or cognitive skills or function?
See, these are all great questions, and we have assays for that too. You might, so the starvation response, the real starvation, tends to have you be less energetic and maybe learn less or maybe learn more. Who knows? How do you know you don't learn more? If you're in a little starvation mode, maybe animals are in a searching, new synapse formation, they have to try something new. So there's evidence for both on that. But I think those are big questions. And obviously, we have animal techniques for measuring that too in the brain for synapse formation and so on. But someone's going to have to deal with that in people sooner or later. But it could be good, it could be bad. We'll have to wait and see. Yes?
How would this work in with diabetics?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. The question was, what about diabetics? So there's actually some evidence, and we published a paper on this, that if you just calorically restrict a diabetic for 3 days, they get incredible benefits in terms of glucose homeostasis and lipids, way more than would be explained by their weight, because they don't lose weight. And this has to do with a starvation response. You lower the liver glycogen and they don't make glucose. To make a long story short, the glucose goes down. So this could be a really terrific treatment for diabetics. And in fact, I know a clinician in Colorado who every Sunday has her patients basically starve. They eat a few hundred calories of Ensure. And she claims that that this benefit, that they get a lowering of glucose without losing weight. And I'm not surprised if it's true. So this has some implications for that as well, although I wouldn't use this per se, and certainly not proven for that. Back there?
What about hydration during this whole time?
Yeah, you got to hydrate. Oh, no, this is not, this is caloric restriction, it's not water fluid restriction. Yes?
So it was kept constant, is what you're saying?
Well, in the animals, they know how to drink, so they'll drink normally. But in humans, the intent is to maintain fluids. So people can drink non-caloric beverages at will, and they will. People can have the thirst mechanism. One question.
What other physiologic changes may occur? For example, if you don't take in protein, then you're going to have a breakdown.
You do take in protein. So excellent question. We do maintain protein intake. That's with the undernutrition without malnutrition. So protein is not diminished in the diet. Now, on that off day, it's a good question. You might lose lean body mass, but that's easily overcome by giving protein in that off day, because that's a small percentage of your daily calories. You can get 50 grams of protein, more than enough. That's 200 calories. That's 15% of your daily. I mean, 5% of your daily, 10% of your daily. So that shouldn't be a problem. It's a good question, though, but it's solvable. Did you have a question?
It seems like these techniques and the earlier techniques involving microtubules are going to depend upon the methodology for assessing these. Could you say a little bit more?
So the way we do this, I didn't want to get into much detail, but we use these stable isotopes, particularly what's called heavy water. Heavy water has deuterium instead of hydrogen. And the body really can't, there's no symptoms. It's been given for 60 years. There's no toxicities. I've taken it. You're just drinking water. It tastes like water. It feels like water. But the deuterium gets into certain pathways in the body. And if you're clever enough and know how to figure this stuff out, you can measure the flow of molecules from that. So you just drink water. So in those CLL patients I showed, they just had a sip of water every day. They did that for 12 weeks because CLL is a slow disease. Other people, you can drink water once and come back 2 days later or an hour later. So that's how we do most of this. Drink heavy water, and then we take a blood or a piece of tissue or whatever, usually blood or urine, and then we isolate some molecule that we've figured out is informative, and we run it on our mass spec, and then it's an index of a particular molecule turnover. And we can do 50 at once. In fact, we've done that. We've done a bunch of turnovers at once. But usually we'll say we're interested in DNA in skin cells or breast cells, and so that'll be turnover of breast cells. And we'll pick three things or five things at any given time.
Does the concept of caloric restriction have anything to do with cellular inflammation during the process of digestion?
Well, probably not. I don't know the answer. I don't know how caloric restriction works. Nobody really does. It's probably not through that, though, because, again, the intermittent feeding, they're eating the same number of calories, so whatever happens in the intestine is still there. It's just the pattern. I think it has to do with sensing of nutrients in the body and cells and secondary response.